Hello and happy new year, Amplify podcast listeners. We are so excited to be back. Oh my goodness, Anise, so much going on for me already. How's your year going?
So far, so good. I got back from Toronto a couple days ago. I went to Fargo, North Dakota, and then Toronto, Ontario to celebrate the holidays, and then got back and went straight out to the Keeneland January sale for a meeting. So it's like right back into the swing of things. And yeah, same for you too. You're right into Sam Houston racing, correct?
Yeah, was there for several days last week. We had a great opening weekend. Really excited to be working with them. I think there's so much opportunity there, and we already had great turnouts over opening weekend. So, but yeah, it's not been the most restful period. I was doing a lot over the holidays as well. We were scoping out wedding venues. We were obviously visiting with as much family as possible. And then I got quite a bit of writing time in. I went through what I see as a little mini boot camp when we were in Wellington. Quite a few lessons with different trainers, and yeah, it was great. But yeah, good start.
I learned how to play pickleball over the holidays. My dad has become a big time pickleball fanatic, so my boot camp,
oh my gosh,
we'll say my pre getting back into polo, was playing lots of pickleball to help with hand eye coordination. So I can't say I did a lot of riding like you did, but hopefully getting back into the riding soon. And I'm pumped for the new year. I'm pumped for our first episode of the year. It's funny how, you know, we have these full circle moments as you go through your life and career. And our guest for today is somebody I would have met several years ago when I was doing the Godolphin Flying Start program. He was one of our speakers. And, you know, I was marveling before we had him on that at the time that he spoke to our Flying Start group, he would have been still quite early on in the development of the platform that he's going to talk to us about today.
Was that 2018?
2018, yes. It's which scary. He gets into the timeline, but yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's scary to think that was like 6 years ago now.
Don't say that. Time goes by too quickly. The older you get, the quicker it seems to go by. But yes. I'm excited for us to invite on Pierce Dargan, the CEO and founder of Equine Medi Record, and somebody who does many things both in the equine industry and out of the equine industry. So we cover a lot in this episode with Pierce, everything from entrepreneurship, which Caitlin and I both have experience with, and Pierce discusses having experience with in a much different capacity from both of our careers, along with the challenges to innovating in what we could say is a pretty traditional industry, expanding internationally, and lots of advice for aspiring entrepreneurs. So buckle up and let's get right into it. Guys, we are so excited to welcome today Pierce Dargan. He is the founder and CEO of Equine Medi Record and Chief Growth Officer of Business Infusion. So we're really going to dive into the equine side of his career and talk about how he got involved in the equine industry. I actually met Pierce when I was doing the Godolphin Flying Start program. He was our speaker along the way, or I think you taught one of our classes at some point and really stood out. And you have a really interesting background in the sense that you are also an ex-pro North America rugby player and founder and racing manager of the Black Rock Racing Syndicate, co-founder and non-executive chairman of the nonprofit Secret Street Tours, which I also might touch on because that's a really interesting thing, and named in Ireland's top 30 under 30. So thank you, Pierce, so much for taking your time to join us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So I actually don't remember. You might have told us this when you were talking to our Flying Start group. How did you get into horses to begin with?
Yeah, so I came through my family. So my grandfather and father being involved in horses. I think it goes back 5 generations that we can trace, probably back even further. So it's very much in the blood. Interestingly, as you kind of alluded to, when I was growing up, when I was younger, some of my fondest memories are with my grandfather at the Curragh racetrack. And then I went through a stage when I was in high school where very much moved away from horse racing, went to rugby, was my passion. I wanted to be a professional rugby player, was very fortunate to do a very short stint of this playing in the professional league in the United States. And it was when I went back to go do my master's that really I got back into it. We over here in Europe have very good horse racing societies. So the way in universities, they have societies of interest that you're interested in. And I had friends who are very interested in the horse racing societies, which are very big in Europe, and they have horse racing, student horse racing days. And I really came back into it then. And that's how I started my business, was really kind of starting to think about it. So I was engaged at a young age, disengaged because I had another interest. And then I came back to it, really. And that's how I got involved again.
So going back to the student horse racing societies, I'm curious to know how that compares. Because over here, you know, University of Kentucky has like a student horse racing club. Would you join this society through your school or directly through the racetrack? Or was it like a college student day that track host?
Yeah, no. So it's a society set up by the university. So there are a bunch of different, when we say society, they're clubs. That's what we call them in Europe. They are clubs. Interestingly, actually, my little brother set up something called the European Student Horse Racing Federation. So that actually is a group of all of the clubs, horse racing clubs within universities in Europe. And then they hold actually something called the Student Derby, which is where each university puts forward a rider to race at the Curragh on the Irish Derby track. And so you literally have the different universities. So you had, you know, Oxford University in England versus Cambridge versus Trinity College in Dublin, University College Cork. They had riders from Spain, from I think Germany, a university in Germany. So it's very active over here. And I think it's a pathway for people who haven't had any sort of interaction with family in the industry. A lot of the time we find that if there is a pathway where people do get involved, it's in university a lot of the time where they do. And it's through these societies or clubs that they start to go with their friends, because we have very big student days. I know you have one, I think, in Kentucky, where it's a big student day where everyone, even if you don't have never watched horse racing before, had never wanted to go watch horse racing before, everyone's going because it's a great day out. And because all your friends are going, you go, and people have done it. So we have similar ones here in Ireland in Leopardstown. We have one in the Curragh. We have one in Cork Racecourse, where they do student day. So we're pretty good here in Ireland. We're very, very active with that and that kind of interaction with the universities. And they all have those clubs where they then interact with horse racing.
So Amplify always attends the one at Keeneland that you mentioned. I believe that Ellis Park here in Kentucky also has a college scholarship day. But the incentive is oftentimes to win a scholarship. So you go to the track. Keeneland has all sorts of activities for the college students. Amplify now does behind the scenes winner circle and paddock tours. But the incentive to actually get the students there was to go and win a scholarship. So what are students incentivized by in Ireland or some of these other countries that have these societies to actually go to the track? Is it mostly driven by their interest in racing, or is there some other factor that draws them in?
I think it's more the party that they'll attend. They usually have a DJ. Our drinking age here in Europe is 18 years of age. So everyone, when they're in university, are you usually legally able to drink? So there's it's a nice fun day out. You watch a bit of horse racing. There's a DJ on. They may even bring in a very well-known kind of artist to play a set after the races happen, and then you're able to hop the tram into the nightclub area of Dublin to kind of have more fun. So there's no incentive in terms of scholarships. It's more the party that the racetrack put on is one where the student day tickets get sold out. You can't buy them. So it's very much a social event where I think some people do go for the horse racing. They do genuinely, like, usually the people who are involved in the horse racing clubs and societies will go for the horse racing. Many others do not. And you hope that a percentage of those then just so happen to watch the horse racing, enjoy it, and then we'll move on and look to become involved in the industry. But yeah, I it's very interesting to hear that the track does it. I didn't realize that it was a scholarship was given out and that was the incentive. Yeah, no, there's no incentive required over here. Bar having a good party in Ireland, that's incentive enough for us anyway.
I love that. Everybody's got their thing that they like about racing, whether it's the horses, or if you're old enough to gamble, or if it's the party piece, or, you know, having a good time with friends. So that's really interesting. I always love the compare and contrast across countries. And I've been sitting here taking notes as we go along as well. Maybe I'll make a recommendation to Keeneland, add DJ for next college scholarship.
I'm surprised they wouldn't have one. If they haven't had one, they might need one. Just do it after the races. Do it after the races, and that's when the big set is done. So the races will finish, and a lot of people will stay on then and have a good dance and a good time afterwards. But then, as you say, they get to watch all the racing then first, mm-hmm. and I think that's a good setup where to get to the nice DJ set at the end, you watch a bit of racing first and you'll get some people who will be really interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I know a number of my friends who are involved in my syndicates, the first interaction they had was through the student aid. And then they stayed on as fans the whole way through. And then obviously the syndicate was the pathway then for them to become active owners within the industry. So yeah, but it can all be traced back to those student days. So big advocate of those student days across the various jurisdictions where horse racing operates.
That's so cool. See, you never know what pathway these conversations are going to bring us down. I didn't even anticipate us talking about that. That's really cool. And so after your, you know, short rugby career, what led you back to horse racing and what made you determine that was going to be your actual career?
Yeah, I guess it was a bit of luck. So I, as part of my, I was doing a master's in Trinity College around business and management, and there was an entrepreneurship module within it where they said, you know, very similar, I think, if from memory to the Flying Start, where you have to go think of a business idea and you have to think about doing a business plan and what you're going to do. And it just so happened that I went down to the farm and was being involved with the day-to-day because one of the staff was out, I believe, either on maternity or sick. So I said, oh, I'll help out with kind of keeping on top of the day-to-day record keeping for the office. And back in 2016, when this was, there were a number of new regulations around compliance of paperwork that needed to be kept for things around animal welfare and anti-doping. So a lot of medical record keeping, a lot of kind of veterinary sign-offs, things of that nature. I was not a vet by trade. No one in the yard was a vet by trade. So it can be quite daunting when you're being asked to keep all this information. And in the case of here in Ireland, if you got it incorrect or you made a mistake, there could be some serious consequences, fines. In the worst case, you know, you're talking about potential losing of a license. To have the horses. So I was like, and then in terms of, it was all paperwork, so it was literally a massive paper book, and obviously in a farm setting where it rains and there's mud and various other things, it was so inefficient. Things would become illegible, the book would be lost, we don't know where we left it in the yard, and I kind of just thought, look, there's got to be a better way of doing this. And so it was part of a college project, and then my professor kind of went, you should actually look into this. This actually sounds pretty interesting. And so that's kind of how I started looking into it. And obviously then the business grew from there.
So what was the next step from that? Like, you know, you determined you wanted to keep growing this. How did you start learning more about the tech side of things and investigating that world and deciding that you want to digitize these documents? Like, who do you even go to help you with something like that?
I was very fortunate. I had a friend in college who studied computer science. So I went straight to him and was like, hi, I have these documents. I'm looking to digitize, to build a platform. What should we do here? And it just so happened, his name's Simon Hillary. He's one of the co-founders of the business. He had been working with the Irish government to digitize a lot of their processes around Oireachtas TV, which is kind of our TV station for our government over here in Ireland. And so his whole background was digitizing paper processes. So once again, when I said I was lucky, I was very lucky. So I went to him. He had no background in horses, nothing at all. And I think that actually was a good mix because my family had been in it for so long. And as you both know, the horse industry can be very much set in certain ways of doing things. And it took someone like Simon to go, well, why do you do it like this way? And I went, oh, well, we've always done it. And he goes, but why? Why don't you do it like this? And you go, oh, that's a fair point. why don't we change it a little bit?
That was going to be a question for you. Like how, especially because, you know, I know over here, and I'm not necessarily a huge fan of change, but I understand why at some point things need to evolve. And even over here where horse racing is, you know, only about 200 years old, it's still difficult to for it to evolve at times. I was going to ask what that was like, if you were met with any resistance when you started coming into these yards or trying to sell the software and say, hey, I know you've been doing it for 1,000 years this way, quite literally, but now, what was that like?
It literally is. So, and by the way, no one likes change. No one likes change. Humans are creatures of habit, you know, so we like keeping things the way, if they're working, why fix it, right? But in this situation where regulations were changing, we were seeing, you know, vaccination rules could change 2-3 times if there was an outbreak over the space of a month. And in Europe here, especially in Ireland, the UK and France, horses cannot race unless their vaccinations are in date. So it wasn't functioning correctly. And a lot of people were getting in trouble, not because they were trying to break the rules, not because they were trying, but because it was just so hard to keep on top of them. We did run into some resistance. Well, the first thing we did was go to the regulators. So we had to go to the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board, Horse Racing Ireland, the Irish Trainers Association, Thoroughbred Breeders Association, the Department of Agriculture here in Ireland, just to name a few, Veterinary Ireland. There are a lot of bodies. So we had to all get them on board to say, look, this is what we're planning on doing. Are you happy with this? And the other thing was, it really hadn't been done yet. So we had kind of assumed that other countries would have done this. No other country had digitized this compliance documentation before we did. So that was another kind of hurdle, was there was no sort of, oh, this is how they do it in this country. There was no other country had done it. Right. So it took us around 2 years to get a framework. So 2016, the business was started. We didn't deploy our first system until 2018. And that was just because we had to check in with all the stakeholders. We had to make sure everyone was happy. We had to make sure the regulators were going to make a digital regulatory record, because we didn't want people, what would be the point be if they had to, they could keep it on our system but then have to fill out the paper document. There would be no point. Mm-hmm. So we did all that, and then we had to go and find the trainers who'd be willing to test it, willing to, you know, see if it would help them. And we were very fortunate from the beginning to have the likes of John Ox, who was a classic winning trainer. We had Noel Mead, who was Irish champion trainer. We had Hugh Dillon, who was a very, very respected equine veterinarian. So they all came out at very early stages and were like, yes, the system works. This is going to move our industry forward. So I think that was a big, but to be honest, there are a lot of people who just didn't want to do it, didn't want to move. And I don't blame them. It's a big decision, especially to move in the likes of an equine farm, changing processes. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing that got us over that was COVID, actually. So the amount of people post-COVID who've come and who were very skeptical, why do we need to change this? It's been on paper, as you say, thousands of years here in Europe. Why change this? COVID, those voices aren't really there anymore because they were forced to adopt technology. You know, if they wanted to travel, you know, they'd have to fill out their COVID document online. They couldn't do it on a paper document. If they wanted to Zoom with their children or grandchildren, they wanted to see them, they had to go online. So I think, to be honest, COVID has really, I feel, moved not only horse racing, I feel like agriculture in general, in Ireland anyway, has been massively moved forward by COVID because a lot of the tech skeptics were kind of made to try technology at least for the first time and to realize it's not that scary. It isn't that massive leap of a change. And I think you got a lot of people who never use systems, never wanted to try technology, going, okay, I'll give this a go. And they realize that's the way the world's going too. So we had some people even then kind of going, yeah, but the internet, that really going to be around? I was going, this is 2016, you know? And yeah. I'm going, okay. But, you know, but you get certain people, and certain people would say that. But we are very fortunate, as I say, since COVID, the traction that we've seen, whether that's with the likes of the Saudi Cup or the Breeders' Cups, you know, or the work with the British Horse Racing Authority with the Grand National, the work we just did in Hong Kong, it's all kind of accelerated a little bit because it's like, yeah, no, this is the way the world is going. So I think that's how we got over it. Luck again.
What has your time? Sorry. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Even before that, and maybe to this day, just again, kind of steering the conversation in an interesting direction. You know, we're essentially all entrepreneurs on this call, and hopefully we have some future young entrepreneurs listening as well. What, you know, you said you were doing the framework from 2016 to 2018, and then of course there's a lot of like beta testing, you know, again, before pre-COVID, there was probably more resistance to the project. What were there times as a entrepreneur where you were like, oh my gosh, this is just, I just want to abandon this because it's, you know, where it was difficult to push through those, you know, roadblocks?
Oh yeah, 100%. It wasn't even that I wanted to abandon it. It was, is this going to fail? I think the biggest time was, so COVID happened at the beginning of COVID. So I said it's been great post-COVID. During COVID was probably one of the hardest times of my life because, you know, equine sports shut down. So where we were operating, there was no horse racing. There was no equestrian sport. You don't really need a compliance system if nothing's occurring. So basically everything dried up. All the conversations we were having, which have now come to fruition, they all paused saying, look, the world is in turmoil. We have no idea what's happening here. We're going to have to revisit this. I had to basically lay off everybody, the whole team. I just had to say, look, business has to survive. We're all going to take a pause. I had to ask my own brother, Finley Dargan, who's another co-founder and operating officer. I had to say, Finn, you got to go find another job. So not a very nice thing to be able to ask your brother essentially to leave the company, the person who started it with you from the beginning. But it was all about keeping the business. And during COVID, the first 2020, remember, it felt like, gosh, is this ever going to end? And I'm just kind of there thinking, gosh, have I just kind of wasted 4 years of my life here? It was really tough. It was a really dark time. I don't want to belittle it. And you know, thankfully, it all came back. All the conversations we are having have all come in. You know, we started growing rapidly, hence why we had to raise some investment. And it was just so fortunate then that Merit's Holdings acquired Business Infusions, which is the largest equine veterinary software group in the world. They have software like HVMS, so Hospital Veterinary Management Systems, which would be the largest practice management system in equine practices. So they run Haggart's, they run Newmarket Equine Hospital, they run Saudi, Dubai, Qatar Equine Hospitals, they run Scone in Australia. They're huge. And it just so happened that they got bought and we were a partner with them and they said, you're looking for funding. Do you want to team up with this? And I said, of course, let's talk about it. Because a lot of the stuff when it comes to what we do with compliance is done by vets. So not all of it, but a good chunk of it is done by vets and is in their systems. So the whole thing was, if we link into the veterinary systems, instead of having the vets have to type into their practice management system to invoice out the work they've done, and then go over here and type into the compliance system, why not just link the two? And it'll say, rather than, and the vet can just go, yeah, push this over, bing, pings over into the trainer's system. Trainer goes, yep, that record's right, tick, signs it, and it's done. So, yeah, but it was a dark time. Like, during COVID, it was very much the, is this going to come back? Have I just wasted a couple of years of my life? And thankfully, it all came back very quickly, and it really accelerated. And now it's been a great, great, great kind of couple of years.
And do you have any advice for entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs or anybody who might be questioning where they're at in their business journey for how you got
there? I'm just going to ask the exact same thing.
I knew we were on the same page because I know, you know, even developing Amplify, I mean, working on GSS, bringing it to the point that we're at now, I mean, it's not easy. You have to have some faith and maybe be a little delusional at times.
Resilience is just so important because you're never going to have, even now, and things have been going so great, you're always going to have setbacks. Things are always going to get delayed. Things are not going to go the way, it's just the way the world is. No one has a perfect journey. It goes back. You have setbacks. You have things, unforeseeable things, people getting hurt, like even unrelated business thing, health issues. So I think resilience and building up resilience is really critical. And at the beginning stage, not being afraid to put yourself out there, not being afraid to get shot down constantly. Because, you know, when we started off and we were trying to basically get test users on our system, easily I'd say 19 out of 20 trainers we called, of those, of the 20, one may say yes, but of the other 19, 10 wouldn't even pick up. Of the 9 that did, 50% of them wouldn't even let you finish the no, hang up. And of the others, they'd say, come back when you have other people. Well, if everyone says that, I'm never coming back. So you've got to really be resilient and know that the vast majority of the people at the beginning aren't going to support us, aren't going to be jumping on board. I think I'm trying to remember the group who did this, but they looked at just markets in general, and it was something like 5% of markets, regardless of where you're starting your new business, are what we call innovators and early adopters. 5%. Remember I said people don't like change? Yeah, this basically says it out. It's like 5% of people are willing to change and to look at new things. 5. So that means 95% of people are going to say no to you initially, but it's a bell curve. So once you get that 5%, it slowly goes, and then there's a tipping point where everyone just comes on. So it's just about getting over that hump. And then the other thing I would say is listen to the market. Don't fall in love with your idea. So we've had to adapt our business very much. So like I feel like we got a lot of traction working with events. So working with Breeders' Cups, working with Saudi Cups, that was not the original idea. The original idea obviously was keeping the vet record for the trainers and everything else, but we listened to the market. And when we got approached by an event, we were willing to kind of adapt our system to go after that opportunity. I feel like quite a few of entrepreneurs I've met will fall in love with our idea. Oh no, this is what it is. This is what this is what we'll do. If the market is telling you that they actually want something slightly different, be willing to pivot your idea. Don't be falling in love with your idea. And I think it was Bezos from always listen to the market, the customer experience. And that's kind of critical, I think, as well. If I was saying it to another entrepreneur, it's just always go back to your customer. Hearing other people's opinions is great, but if they're not your customer, I'm really sorry, they're not relevant. Your friends and your family and everyone are going to say how great it is and everything else. If they are not your customer, say thank you, but go ask your customer what they think. And in our industry, as you know, they don't have time, and we're blessed in that sense. They do not have time to say how great everything is. If it's not good, they'll tell you. And it allowed us to be able to change it. Whereas in other industries, they say, beware of the nice customer who says everything's great, and because they don't want to basically call your baby ugly. So, you know, in our industry, they have no problem doing that. They won't call your horse call your baby ugly. They'll say, yeah, this system needs to change, you have to do X, Y, and Z. So but yeah, those are kind of the little snippets of advice I'd give.
Caitlin, I'm curious to know, did you guys ever have one of those moments where it was like your customer told you they needed something different and you guys had to pivot with GSS, the marketing agency? Because when you guys came on board to offer social media services to the industry, that was a very new concept for the thoroughbred industry, to have an actual marketing agency that is providing social media services. So I'd imagine maybe you faced something similar.
Yes. I think the biggest shift for us, though, was, you know, coming into practice in like 2015, 2016, and thinking, okay, social media is going to be the driving force behind the agency. And what our market told us was that actually there's a lot more that's needed, because, you know, social media is just a part of a marketing strategy. It's a tactic. It's not a marketing strategy. It's, you know, your social media branding is not your company branding. Like, it all has to tie back to the original company business goals and marketing goals. And so what we found was that in horse racing, a lot of that was like non-existent. So doing social media for a lot of the clients that would come on, it was just a little bit like a band-aid. And so it was like, no, we need to go back to the beginning. We need to define your business goals. We need to define how, you know, different marketing tactics and strategies are going to help meet those business goals, and social media can be a piece of this. So that's why we ended up going through the rebranding, to rebrand from Grand Slam Social to GSS, the marketing agency, because so much of what we've been doing and so much of what our customers need is just general marketing direction and branding. And social media happens to be a large part of, you know, the marketing landscape these days. So yeah, that's how we went through a big shift, listening to and, you know, receiving feedback from our audience. It was really what they needed, that at times they didn't even know they needed that. But as, you know, the marketing experts, we were like, okay, well, we can do your social media, but if the brand is not fully thought out, then it's really not a great place to start.
It's interesting because we're kind of going through this at the moment with Amplify, where we've now been in operation for a couple of years. When it comes to the North American thoroughbred market, we were very new, a very new concept, I'll say, in the sense that we're an organization to get youth and young adults involved, versus, you know, Ireland has Equip, and England has Careers in Racing, and Australia has Thoroughbred Industry Careers. They already had these amazing platforms to get youth and young adults involved in the industry and ushered into career pathways. So now we're a couple of years into Amplify. You know, the industry has been really excited and really supportive of us, but we're really having to look at, you know, the industry isn't exactly our customer. Our customer is, you know, it's the young people that we're bringing into the industry. It's educators who are going to be delivering our resources to students, it's parents to make sure they know how to get their kids involved. And I think the industry does a good job of like talking to itself at times. And that, I guess, maybe kind of goes back to that resistance to change where we're like, we're doing a good job. This is this thing that we have. And so now we're trying to, you know, actually go back and ask our customer, being, you know, the students, the educators, is this what you need? Do you need more from us? Do we need to pivot and provide a different set of resources? So regardless of what field you're in, I guess, when you're involved in entrepreneurship, you sort of reach that point where you have to assess what the market and what your customer really wants and how you need to go about addressing that.
Yes, so, and I think curious, feedback, Caitlin. Just to your point about feedback, Pierce, it's all about, as an entrepreneur, listening to the direct and the indirect feedback, right? So just for example, you know, Anise, that sounds like what you're getting. It's indirect feedback that is helping you figure out, oh, we need to be talking to outside the industry, doing more to reach outside audiences. And for us, it was, again, people coming to us and saying, I want social media. And we'd say, okay, great. Can we see your marketing plan? And they would say, I don't have one. Or, you know, an example of direct feedback would say, we need a website. Can you do that? And so then we would add website services. So yeah, I think in Pierce's case, he might get a lot of direct feedback from trainers or vets saying, no, we don't want this. But he probably also receives a lot of indirect feedback, which tells him differently. And it's probably, I think, as an entrepreneur, what at times keeps you going, because you're reading the indirect feedback and you're thinking, okay, no, I know that this, my product is valuable. My service is valuable.
Pierce, what's and been I the think, biggest, oh, sorry, go ahead. I was just gonna ask the biggest, go ahead.
I was just going to comment on that is, you know, you're right in terms of it does motivate you, because if people, and this is the big thing as well, I just wanted to say for people starting off, don't look at the criticism of a product as a negative. You know, a lot of people be like, oh, people come back and go, this isn't working like this. This is, why don't you have this feature? If they've taken the time to actually give you the feedback, they're interested in the system or the product or whatever you're doing. Because if they weren't, they wouldn't have spent time out of their day to do it. You know, so if they're giving you things that they want added to a system, or they want added to, you know, the services that you offer, or whatever you may be doing, don't take that negatively. Take that as a positive that someone has taken time out of their day to tell you how to improve what you're providing to people. Because I see so many entrepreneurs take it as, oh gosh, people are complaining about what I'm providing. No, they're not. They're telling you how to make it better. You should be thanking those people, and you should be going, wow, they have taken time out of their day because everyone's busy to tell me how I can better serve the people I'm trying to sell to. So it's just a kind of viewing that differently. And I think the entrepreneurs I know who've been, they like, as you say, that it motivated you, and it motivates you, and it should. And I think that's what needs to be kind of the mindset if you are an entrepreneur, is to look at that quote unquote criticism as almost the best thing you can guess, because it improves what you're going to provide to the customers.
And now Equine MediRecord has an international presence, as you've already mentioned, you know, being involved with the Saudi Cup and Breeders' Cup and, you know, multiple other, you know, industry initiatives and organizations that you guys have been affiliated with in some way. So were there any changes or pivots that you had to make, or additions to the platform to be able to serve the industry internationally?
Yeah, so the regulations are very different across different countries, very, very different. And even within countries. So the regulations that are required, say, for a Breeders' Cup versus a normal race in another state are different. Just because if we take the Breeders' Cup example, when we did the Breeders' Cup in Santa Anita this past year, you were dealing with regulations for Breeders' Cup that then would look at First Racing, who were the racetrack owner. You looked at the state authority, the Californian Horse Racing Board, as well then as HISA, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. So we were dealing with four different regulators when we were doing that. So we basically had to coordinate between those four, make sure they were all happy with what we were providing was correct and what the data that we were collecting was correct and in the correct format. Versus, say, a Saudi, where we work with the Saudi Jockey Club, and the rules are only from the Saudi Jockey Club. And what they collect for that, because they actually pay. So if you're lucky enough to be invited to go to the Saudi Cup Festival with a horse, they will pay all the transportation costs for that horse to travel to the Saudi Cup. So if you are sending a horse from California, it's the Saudi Jockey Club. So they have so many protocols because they don't want a horse turning up that's lame, you know, to not race, because that's a lot of money. So they send a lot of extra kind of not only documentation, but trot up videos that they want in advance. And then because no horse can travel to Saudi before being cleared on our system, there's actually quite a few kind of transportation regulations on top of that as well, in terms of the Saudi government's vaccination rules and things like that. So it really does depend. And our system is built in a way that 90% of it is the same from a user experience perspective. So if I'm a trainer, I kind of get, if I've used Equine Ready Breckle before, whether that's been for Breeders' Cups, for Pegasus World Cups, for the Preakness, for the Grand National, for the Saudi Cup, I'm used to that same experience of, oh, that's where I log in, that's where I put the stuff in. But the system then changes. So when I click the horse, and now it's going to Saudi, automatically the new fields that are required by Saudi pop up. Or if I'm going to Breeders' Cup, they pop up. And I don't even think about it. It's just those that the system will ask me to put in information. Because previous to us, what was happening was, you know, and I'll use Willie Mullins as our example, because he's our ambassador here in Ireland, our public ambassador, champion trainer. And he's raced horses all over the world in Breeders' Cups, Melbourne Cups, Hong Kong, Japan, you know, you across all of Europe, obviously. And it was one of his staff who would, unfortunately, if the horse is running over in, you know, in the Breeders' Cup, would have to call up, what are the rules? What do I have to do? What are things I got to do? Next time would be off to England. Next time would be off to Saudi. Whereas now we work, it's normally Virginie, who's lovely, who handles all that for Willie. And she just has the system there. She logs in. She knows. Horse going off to Saudi. Click the horse. Boom. That's what I got to fill out. So it just makes it easier. And that's all we're trying to do, is make it easier for people. And then to ensure compliance as well from the event organizer. So they make sure 100% that they have everything in that is required to ensure the welfare of that animal before it competes. And then, God forbid, if a horse fails a doping test or something happens, they have a chain of custody of all of those records immediately. It isn't, oh gosh, where's that paperwork? What was the chain of custody with that paperwork? How can we ensure that it's there? It's immediate. They can do a whole audit review of all the records in 5 seconds to know exactly what's happening. So that's kind of why it's there and what we do, various jurisdictions. But as we say, the regulations are very different depending on the jurisdiction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's next for you guys in terms of growth?
Yeah, so I think that the aim now is to look at certain jurisdictions where they've started to talk around making a compliance system for all the racehorses, so across the country. Similar to kind of what HISA has done in the United States, with the vets now have to report all the stuff into the HISA system, that we'd look to try and launch what we're doing from an equine welfare and anti-doping perspective with EMR across a jurisdiction. So we're in talks with a couple of different countries who would be looking to do it for. So just essentially it goes from the system being used at certain events to the system being used at every single race day of that jurisdiction. So that's kind of where we get our mass adoption. And it would be really great then to kind of see what would, in terms of what would come out of that from a animal welfare perspective, looking at, okay, how many horses got hurt pre versus post, looking at kind of research that could be done with the data that was collected to see how we could improve those processes, to see if there are any preventative ways to try and reduce kind of injuries in racehorses. So there's so many opportunities after that of what could be done. But I think the next thing for us is to go from that one-off event and doing kind of a Breeders' Cup, a Preakness, a Grand National, a Saudi Cup, to this is just a system that is used on a day-to-day. And those discussions have started, but look, when that will occur, I'm not going to lie to you, I have no idea. I have no power making, decision making in this process. It's what I say when I get questions about it from various participants around regulations and what needs to be filled out. I have no say in that. That will be decided above my paid grade by the regulators themselves, whether that be HITA, the state authorities in the United States, whether it's the likes of the British Horse Racing Authority or Horse Racing Ireland or the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board in Ireland or the Saudi Jockey Club or further afield. We'll be ready, and we're always trying to look at ways that we can help kind of digitize and automate those processes around animal welfare and anti-doping in the industry. It's highly rewarding, and that we can hopefully make a difference to the industry while also providing something to trainers and veterinarians and their assistants to make it easier to comply with all these rules. So that's kind of the aim.
That's awesome. It's so cool to see the growth, because I would have met you in 2018. And so you guys still would have been in relatively early stages compared to you are now. And, to see an idea come to fruition and be making that level of a difference in the industry on an international scale is really, really cool. So I congratulate you, Pierce. That was pretty awesome.
No, thank you. I'd love to show you the system, the one I showed in 2018 versus now. Oh gosh, it would be a big difference, let's say that. You look back and you look at the first thing you sold and you go, gosh, how did anyone pay us for that? Lord, you're a little semi-embarrassed looking back at it going, gosh, that was really what we brought to market. Okay, but that's the minimal viable product everyone talks about, MVP, it's kind of come on a long way since 2018, a long, long way. And as I say, that's a thanks to the amazing team I have, my brother Finley in particular, for kind of sticking through it with me. And then we've really kind of been able to ramp up because Business of Fusions and being part of their group, they're so knowledgeable. They've kind of been providing the leading software for equine vets for 20 years. So a lot of the time where we run into issues or questions or things, I'm just so fortunate to have the likes of the group CEO, Scott Pickard, and the COO, Don Brooks, and Zyda from a product perspective, that if I have any sort of kind of issues or I need some advice, they are able to go, oh yeah, no, we did that 15 years ago, we ran into a similar, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. Another piece of advice to entrepreneurs, find a mentor who's gone through it. It is so, unless you've gone through it, you're not gonna, both of you know, it's something, it's hard to explain, and you're always gonna have questions and you're always gonna have issues. And for me, it's been invaluable to be able to go to those people within my group and go, what did you do when these things came up? And they're able to go, oh yeah, we did X, Y, and Z. This is how we attack that problem. So yeah, I think a lot of the growth has been because I've been very, very fortunate to surround myself with very, very capable and lovely people who are willing to take phone calls at ungodly hours on weekends and early in the morning when I call going, we've had this issue, we had this trainer say X, Y, and Z, we had this regulatory. What do we do? And instead of going, Pierce, it's 6 a.m. on a Sunday, please call me later. They actually talk to me. So I've been very, very, very fortunate in that perspective as well.
I'm curious, how do you balance your time? Because you do a lot of things, you know, both in your career and we'll say extracurricular sort of things. And, you know, between Equine MediRecord and Business Infusions and, you know, you're involved in, are you, you're still involved in BlackRock Racing Syndicate, correct? Or that was a previous name?
Yep. You're still involved in that? We have William Street Town Tours. Dancer. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Secret Street Tours, I'm very fortunate. I think the biggest thing, I manage my time. So EMR is my life and my work. I'm very fortunate. That would take up the vast majority of my time. The racing, the BlackRock Racing Syndicate, that's just because I have a bunch of friends who are crazy about racing. And we said, hey, let's get involved. And we're very fortunate. We have a good filly at the moment. Won a grade three at the tail end of last year at National Hunt Racing. So we'd hope that she'll be doing very well next year, a horse called Williamstown Dancer. In terms of Secret Street Tours, again, I just surround myself with very, very capable, great people. And so that's run by my co-founder, Tom Austin. So he'd be the chief executive. Once again, I played that role of, he came to me with the idea. So Secret Street Tours is, it's a tour set up by someone who's been affected by homelessness. And then they give a tour of their local area. So it will be in a part of Dublin where a lot of tourists would go. And so they'll show you, okay, this is Dublin Castle. This is the history behind Dublin Castle. But to me, this is where I'd come, you know, in the mornings after being told to leave the hostel I'd stayed at the night before, because there was just peace in this part of Dublin Castle in the garden. So I would sit here and kind of enjoy a coffee. So they give their story of what you see as a tourist, and then what you may not see as the life of someone who's had to go through homelessness. So my friend went through and did a tour like that in Vienna. It was a top rated tour at the time on TripAdvisor in Vienna, a walking tour. Wow. And came back to me, knew I'd started a business, and went, Pierce, how do you start a business? How do you register it? What do you do? What do you do, you know, with lawyers and accountants and everything else? So I played very much more that advisory role to him. That's why I'm non-executive chairman of it. I'll still give advice, but it's very much run by Tom Austin. So that's kind of on the Secret Street Tour side. So I think it's just getting involved with good people and people you can trust. Secret Street Tours was Tom. I'd known him for years in school. It was the same with BlackRock Racing Syndicate. I started that with two friends from who I'd known for a long time. And it's just being able then to rely on some other people, because no one can do it all themselves. You need to have good, reliable team members, whether it's a nonprofit organization, whether it's running a syndicate, whether it's starting a business. It's surrounding yourself with the right people who you can rely on, because no one can do it all themselves. Even though when you start your own business, you are a little bit of marketing, you're a little bit of accounting, you're a little bit of legal, a little bit of all sales, because you have to be. But even then, you're going to need support from people. So my biggest advice is try and find those people who you can trust. And that's kind of where I've been so lucky, is I've been very fortunate to meet really great people that I've been able to start these things with that have gone on.
And I think just as a whole, like Caitlin and I can probably both relate to that, because we're both involved in companies that, you know, we work with friends, whether they're on our boards or whether they're our co-founders or colleagues in work. Like, I think that's part of racing as a whole, is it has this amazing community aspect to it, and we all have this really shared interest in, I guess, what can be considered a niche industry or a niche sport. And, you know, it really brings people together in this incredible way. And I guess for the three of us has led to the creation of some cool businesses and companies. And, you know, I'll go so far as saying having our dream jobs. So pretty awesome.
Oh, no. No, it is. And I think something that should be mentioned, obviously, is I think that connection also comes down to they've started to look at this in scientific studies. There is something on an emotional level with people who connect with horses. And I think that's why you see they're starting to do a lot of equine related therapy when it comes to people and specifically children who would have learning difficulties, severe autism. They'll be nonverbal, and it's something with a horse and being able to connect with a horse. They've looked at the rocking motion of a horse stimulating a part of the brain that will allow it to actually children to start to talk while then obviously being involved with a living animal. There is something there, and they are doing research on it, and I think everyone in the industry is a little bit touched by it, and we have that special connection, and it's why we love what we do. As you say, it is a dream job to do, and I have been so fortunate to go around an industry that I love with people who are really amazing to watch the best animals in the world. So you know, it has been an amazing opportunity, and as I say, I do consider myself extremely lucky that everything kind of lined up to make that possible. And I really would change it for nothing.
Pierce, thank you so much for joining Caitlin and I today. This has been another awesome episode. Caitlin, are you going to the Pegasus World Cup?
I will not be. I will actually be at Sam Houston for the Houston Ladies Classic. So yeah, it's actually very exciting. I was there over the weekend, and Eric Asmussen won his first race. It was our first race of the year, and his dad was there and his mom was there. And that was very cool. Obviously, Steve Asmussen, a very well-known trainer. And yeah, so we've been having some fun here in Texas.
Pierce, I hope you enjoy Pegasus. I will also not be there. I'll be at the National Mentoring Summit in Washington, D.C., but I still have yet to check Pegasus off my list, so I hope you have a great time.
Yes.
Certainly. You need to get down. It's a lovely experience. And I believe they have a DJ after the racing. I think it's Calvin Harris this year. So, yes, it will be a very fun experience. Yeah, the DJ, exactly. So I think I'll have a very fun experience. I love going every year. I'm once again blessed to go down every year. And great racing. Phenomenal racing. So really looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, and thank hope to see so much, you in person again soon.
Yeah.
No, definitely. Oh yeah. Please God, it will be Breeders' Cup, if not sooner. I will say my traveling may cease a little bit for a couple of months. My wife is expecting our first child, a baby girl coming in April. So I will be grounded for a little period and doing a little bit more remote. As I say, I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by amazing people who will be taking up some of the travel from me while I can spend some time with her. But definitely, hopefully in the near future, we'll all cross paths.
So wonderful. Cool. Yeah. Congratulations. So hopefully see you at Breeders' Cup, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Definitely. All right. Talk soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Amplify Horse Racing podcast. If you have an idea for an episode or want to send us a comment, email us at info@amplifyhorseracing.org. You can find Amplify across social media on X, formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. We publish twice weekly, so be sure to tune in on your favorite podcasting platform of choice to catch the next episode, and don't forget to rate and review us. Catch you next time.